Now, welcome to Pro 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 662. Jason Lindgren is with me, and we're going to do the magnum opus on Edward Bernays. We did two episodes prior to COVID. The last one was right as COVID started, along with what we lay down here to thoroughly cover a man who changed this country as much as anyone you can think of. We're going to point out some things that we predicted in the previous two Bernays episodes that actually came to pass. Welcome, Jason.
And a warm and pleasant good morning.
So you've put together quite the ultimate in-depth on Bernays here. Is there anything you want to mention about the notes or the man before we jump?
So if you don't know who Edward Bernays is, you need to listen to everything we're going to go over here. No single individual has done so much to change Western society as much as this guy did.
All right, we're going to get into it here, Jason. Why don't you go ahead and pick up?
The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. And that is a quote from Edward Bernays' book, Propaganda, that was published all the way back in 1928.
One thing you should check out here is this book, Propaganda. As Jason pointed out, it came out in 1928, but it's in your face. It's almost unbelievable that things like this were printed and nobody batted an eye. I mean, what do you think, Jason? There's some incredible in your face, this is what we're doing information in that book.
And this wasn't even his first book. He had another one about the public relations job that he pretty much created that was called Crystallizing Public Opinion that was published in 1923. This guy pretty much wrote the book, as it were, on how to manipulate, how to spin, how to take something that someone wants to sell or push an idea or whatever it happens to be. And he taught everyone, hey, here's how you can attach emotion to it to get it across to the masses, whatever it happens to be. He did so many campaigns and pulled off so many stunts. It's almost unbelievable what this guy did.
All right, here we're going to lay down the first of a number of things we predicted. From episode 204, quoting Bernays, this is about invisible government. COVID started in 2020, as everybody knows. The messaging went out in uniformity worldwide. There were identical public slogans put out in Bernays style, like stay home, flatten the curve, trust the experts. It was wall to wall, kind of out of this playbook, if you go and compare the two things. The other idea is the trusted news initiatives. All the news and everyone else was in lockstep. And I don't know if we can actually say the playbook is Bernays. But if we did say that, I don't think we would be far off it. If you consider what the BBC was doing, AP, Reuters, Washington Post, even everything online, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, they were in lockstep in what they were allowing to be talked about and what they were pushing. And of course, the old marketing terms in Bernays fashion were in little bite-sized chunks, 6 feet apart. You know what they were. You heard them all. But this was predicted not predicted that it was about to happen because we didn't know COVID was there yet, but it was predicted as the things that do happen based on the work of Bernays.
COVID is a perfect example of the style and techniques that he used because everything to do with COVID was tied to an emotion. In this particular case, it was fear and fear on an extremely grand scale. That's Bernays absolutely to a T.
Yeah. And another thing Bernays does is he brings out the lab coat, the doctor, the professional, the one you should trust. And you've got to realize the WHO, who had press kits that went out in March and April of 2020 across 60 countries. Well, there's your playbook right there, your literal playbook that went out to all these agencies that were going to, I don't know how else to say it, market us and fear us into obeying what they were directing.
And appealing to a sense of authority is something he did a lot. He even pulled that little stunt on David Letterman when he was on as a guest in the, I think, the late 1980s, if I remember correctly, where he had himself introduced as Dr. Bernays. And then he told David more towards the end of the interview that he's not actually a doctor, but that if you convince someone that you're a doctor, that they're more likely to believe what it is you have to say because it's an appeal to authority. This was him laughing at everyone while using his own techniques that he had come up with. And he did it in front of a very large, at the time, much more a modern audience than he would have been dealing with in the early 20th century.
I'd be more accusatory. He's basically poking the world in the eye and on television doing the very things that he did. And you can go look up that clip. I think you ran it last time around the time we did this, but you can look up the Bernays clip on Letterman. It's unbelievable.
So Edward Bernays is the single most influential figure in the shaping of modern society, and yet too many people have never even heard of him. His work in propaganda, which he would later rebrand as public relations, created consumer culture, the celebrity obsession, and the mind-controlled populations that we see today. Edward Bernays was not just another guy doing marketing for products. Edward Bernays was a social engineer of the highest magnitude, one who worked behind the scenes, using Sigmund Freud's psychoanalysis techniques to manipulate human behavior on a mass scale. He was wildly successful at this. His influence spans advertising, corporate power, entertainment, politics, public health, and even war. Have you ever purchased a product, believed a news headline, or adopted some nifty social trend? I bet you have, and there is a good chance that it was a Bernays-style tactic that was at work on you.
And you can see right in the beginning of this point, he's actually in real time, in real life, going to change the title propaganda. What's he change it to? Public relations. And immediately you're probably thinking of some corporate workplace you have been in where they have a, wait for it, human resources. And, you know, we could ask the question, at what point did human beings become a resource openly? I think we could probably say that happened post-Bernays.
Companies didn't really have public relations or PR departments for the most part before Edward Bernays put this on the map. Now, he was not the only one doing it, but he was certainly the biggest one to do it on such a scale, to the point that this is what every corporation would have nowadays.
You know, if I asked you, Jason, what did Edward Bernays do? Give me like a job title or, you know, what is it specifically? And if I asked you that, we think, well, what did he do? But really what we're talking about here, it's marketing, right? That's basically, in a nutshell, what he did. He reapplied marketing as if you were pushing a product somewhere and turned it around back on the population.
It's marketing, but in a way that's incredibly manipulative. It's not just buy this car. It's buy this car because it'll make you feel this particular way. This is something he figured out. He combined the work of his uncle, Sigmund Freud, which of course was all psychological techniques and manipulation. He paired that with the concepts of marketing and how to get people to do what it is that you want them to do.
All right, here's another prediction from episode 204 when Jason and I predicted this. It comes from this quote out of, I think this is from Propaganda, manipulate herd instinct, fear and nonsense around colds, the toilet paper panic that happened in 2020. It falls right in line. Was there ever a toilet paper shortage? Well, there sure as heck was after they put it on the news and everyone ran out and filled their car with it. The next is mask compliance. And there's different estimates about how many people were veiling their spirit, as I like to say, because we know that our breath is our spirit. They want to claim it was 25 to 30% of the population in some places, but where I was, I would say that was more like 85% of what I saw going on around here. Jason, I feel like it was a little more lax where you were. Is that true?
The area where I live specifically, which is a little town on the North Shore of New Orleans, was crazy at first, like everybody, but it eased off pretty quick. But if you went over the bridge across Lake Pontchartrain to New Orleans, it was a very different story, and a lot of people were a lot more crazy about that whole situation.
I think I got kicked out of about a third of all the places that I regularly went to, and maybe about half of those places knew me, at least by look, when I walked in, and they were absolutely getting angry when they did it. It was a sight to behold. There's a cheese shop that I used to go into, and they kicked me out, and I used to spend a lot of money over a year there. They had good products, and I remember going back in when people had finally quit wearing masks, and the guy who threw me out was the owner, and I saw him in there as I walked in, and there were a bunch of people in there, and I said, "Are you guys allowing faces again?" And everybody stopped and looked at me, and then finally someone laughed, and everyone giggled, and I saw just total embarrassment flash across his face.
Deservedly so.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. People damaged their own businesses based on basically Bernays style marketing that was thrown at them.
Edward Bernays was the double nephew of the renowned psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud. This is a very important fact to understand about where Eddie came from. His mother, Anna, was Sigmund Freud's sister, and his father, Eli Bernays, was the brother of Freud's wife, Martha. This meant that Bernays had direct access to Freud's early work on psychoanalysis and subconscious drives. Freud's theories on hidden desires, sexual impulses, and herd mentality fascinated a young Edward Bernays, and rather than using this knowledge for psychological healing, he weaponized them for mass manipulation and was paid quite handsomely for doing so. Bernays saw society not as a collection of free-thinking individuals, but as a herd that could be controlled through subconscious triggers. Sadly, this is not necessarily wrong. If people could be made to believe they were making their own choices while actually being led down a carefully crafted path, they could be guided without ever realizing what was happening to them. This technique was the key to Edward Bernays' success.
This one point alone, Jason, almost makes me feel like you could start to question whether the existence of Bernays was even pre-planned. I mean, this is all in the family. So all the kind of mental hacking, if we can call it that, that Freud was privy to was almost certainly on offer. And I think in the other episodes, we talked about which language was first, because Bernays is basically an immigrant. I think if I remember correctly, I thought maybe his first language was Austrian or German or something like that. And if I further remember correctly, I think you corrected me and said his first language was English. Nonetheless, he had access to all of that. And when we look at psychology today, there are basically two names that are front and center, and even they are related. That's Freud and Jung. Jung being Freud's pupil up to a point. Most people are more fascinated with what Jung did later because he went kind of occult more than Freud did. But all that headway that Freud made and what I call hacking the human mind must have been on offer to Bernays. I mean, what do you think?
Oh, absolutely. He definitely used the techniques that he learned about this at the time rather new field of psychology, psychoanalysis, and all that. And he put it to work in the most powerful ways.
All right, here's another thing that we covered in episode 78. The idea is persuading people to accept what they don't even know is good for them. The proof occurred when the government defined categories shaping public belief about necessity, things that came out of places like the U.S. Department of Homeland Security in 2020. Then the idea is you have a choice to do this or not, but if you don't, you can't fly, you can't work, and you'll also see the manipulation of it's put forward as if it's a law. And then finally, over time, well, we never said you had to do this, and it was just a suggestion. And by the way, we pushed that off to the CDC, and that was a request and all the word games that go with it. But Jason and I have covered people who lost their job because they refused to comply. And there were a number of them. I even know a few of them. Anyhow, back to you, Jason.
Bernays' connection to Sigmund Freud was not just with family, but also a direct line to one of the most powerful psychological toolkits that has ever been devised. Sigmund Freud pioneered a lot of the early work on psychology, and that research into the unconscious mind, repression, and human desires fascinated Eddie. And so he began to apply these insights to mass communication. Freud had identified that humans are irrational creatures who are often driven by subconscious fears and desires. Bernays realized that if these impulses could be harnessed and directed, they could be used to guide mass behavior without people ever realizing it. His genius was in taking complex psychological theories and turning them into practical methods for controlling society.
Case in point, in episode 78, we were talking about how Bernays would use a doctor or someone that society respects, that you're supposed to listen to. And they put this in play during COVID. Think about Dr. Fauci, right? He had 400 TV appearances in 2020 through 2021 alone. And then the CDC changing definitions, the idea of herd immunity and vaccines, things were changed mid-pandemic. The point is that when we pointed out what Jason pointed out in the Letterman clip, is he comes out as an example and says, I'm a doctor, and nobody thinks twice about it. As it goes on, he admits he's not a doctor. But the effect of having said that was still with the people, which is why it's a poke in the eye. Needless to say, the tactic of putting professionals up front to get people to do things was absolutely employed shortly after we did the episode. And I think Fauci is really the poster boy there.
The appeal to authority is a fantastic trick that was used over and over and over again and still is to this day. And a great example of this is the stupid little paper masks thing. How many times did they change what their statement was about how good or effective they were, back and forth and back and forth and all that? And the admitted truth is they don't really do jack. They're worthless. As a matter of fact, they actually, not that they would ever admit this, cause you to breathe in your own exhalation, which is terrible for you. But as far as someone like a Dr. Fauci is concerned, he changed multiple times on TV as to how good or bad or effective these masks were. And it doesn't matter, because once they put out the statement about these masks, all of the people, or at least most of them, fell for it, thinking that, oh, this is what I got to do. And what did they do? They got obsessive about everyone has to be masked up.
Unbelievable how easy it was to convince people they should breathe their own exhaust fumes all day. While it was going on, I even saw people driving alone in cars, breathing their own exhaust fumes. And I was blown away. And after we got by all that, I began to consider, I wonder if this could happen again as easily. I wonder if we learned something en masse if this came around again. And just as I started to kind of think maybe we did, maybe there's a much larger portion of society that wouldn't just jump off the cliff if this came around again. But then about, I don't know, 2 years ago, I began to realize something that a lot of people that I've known for a while don't seem to be thinking clearly anymore. And I'm speaking about people who took the jab. There seems to be a very large group of people that no longer thinks as they once did. I don't know if you've run into this, Jason.
My opinion on the aftermath of all this is a certain small sect of people woke up to how insane all that was and won't fall for it again, or most likely won't. But most people are still going to go along with whatever the white lab coat says.
I hope that's wrong, but I suspect that it's not.
Edward Bernays originally studied agriculture at Cornell University, which he graduated from in 1912. Instead of becoming a farmer, however, he decided he had a far more profitable crop that he wanted to try to cultivate: the human mind. He quickly abandoned farming to pursue a career in journalism and media, realizing that controlling public perception was the real key to power. His early work in medical journals gave him a first-hand look at how people respond to information, how trust is built, and how experts could be used to manipulate public opinion. This experience laid the foundation for his later work in advertising, war propaganda, and social engineering.
And another thing, you know, we're talking about propaganda coming out in just about the mid-20s, 1920s. When I've done research on my own on Tavistock, you're always right back there close to 1900, but then we have the Frankfurt School, which preceded Tavistock by a bit. And that goes back into the tail end, as far as we know, of the 1800s. So when you're looking at Bernays, it hasn't been an open known thing, talking about social engineering, for all that many decades yet. It's relatively new, and Bernays is kind of paving the way. You got to wonder how a guy ends up in that position. And being the double nephew of Freud really makes me think that it may have been carefully planned to happen that way.
Bernays' entry into journalism gave him an inside look at how media shapes public perception. He worked as a co-editor for medical publications like the Medical Review of Reviews and the Dietetic and Hygienic Gazette. During this time, he realized that many people will believe whatever is presented as an expert opinion. Eddie saw how information could be framed and manipulated to push an agenda, and he would later use these techniques on a much larger scale, whether it was selling a war, making bacon the healthy choice, or convincing people to accept government policies that were not in their best interest. Bernays knew that controlling the media meant controlling the people.
You know, if you go back and look at early television when it's still black and white, there's a period of time, and you can still look up the clips, where you get the impression that the advertisers are really holding all the power. They are funding the episode. They have enormous input on what can be shown, where their products are going to go. And I would urge people, go back and look at a few of those clips when some peanut butter company is deciding whether or not some variety show can cover this topic or that topic. And that puts exactly what we're talking about together. So television being controlled by advertisers, and then we have the Bernays, who is basically a marketing genius, and he's turning the society into the product. But you can see that there's an unbroken chain from the social engineering on Bernays's end all the way through to how things make it onto TV because it's being paid for by advertisers.
Well, we can actually go back before that, because it wasn't just TV. Radio had the such and such hour, and such being a product that was the main sponsor for that particular program. That happened pretty early on, like the 1930s, before television ever became a thing.
Right. And so when we're in the YouTube age, and we, you know, sometimes we commiserate, look, you know, everything is marketing and clicks and views. That's the only way you can get paid. And we act like it's new, but it's not. And Jason just pointed back to the dawn of radio, where again, it is the advertising dollar that is footing the majority of the bill. And that gave them enormous power. And what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about companies who want you to buy their product. That's what we're talking about.
When the United States entered World War I, many Americans had opposed involvement. To change this, Bernays worked with Woodrow Wilson's Committee on Public Information, the CPI, a government agency that had been created to convince the public that the war was necessary. Through posters, films, speeches, and staged events, Edward Bernays and his colleagues turned an anti-war nation into an enthusiastic war machine. This was one of his first major psychological operations, one that proved that a skilled propagandist could shift public sentiment on a massive scale.
And it worked. It worked as well as you could hope. But look what was put behind that. If you go look at movies from the 1940s, even the late 30s, up to about 45, I mean, is it half of them or more that are pushing war propaganda? It's a lot of them. So you've got Hollywood, then the advertisers who are behind all the things going out on radio and TV, they're in line with it. And then you get a person like Bernays, who's actually now working with a governmental agency that has its own three-letter moniker to get this done. And they did get it done. These ideas are echoed in modern cinema with things like Captain America, where he wants to go out and fight those bad Germans, but instead he's going to go on the stage and sell war bonds.
The word propaganda had quite a negative connotation following World War I. So Edward Bernays did what any skilled manipulator would do. He rebranded it. While the concept of public relations, or PR, already existed, in the 1920s, he coined the term Public Relations Council, which was what he called his business practice. He did this as a way to package propaganda into a more palatable form to a general audience. But it was the exact same thing. PR became the primary tool for controlling public opinion without the public realizing it. Today, every major corporation, politician, and government entity employs PR firms to manipulate perception. What Bernays started over a century ago is still the dominant force behind modern mass communication. And I hadn't thought about this when we were writing this, but I can only imagine what Edward Bernays could do with something like social media.
Well, I was about to take it further, right? When you put the period on the end of that point, I'm going to suggest that the PR is being actively, the public relations is being actively employed in real time by AI and by outright planning in the search returns you get, the content that is suggested to you, and of course, what is allowed to run and what is not allowed to run. And you can remember when the censorship came on at first, it was, you can't do that. We're deleting it. We're giving it a strike. That was the whip, the crack of the whip to get you in line. But now it's, well, if you do that, you can't make any money at it. If it's really egregious to them, they might say, well, that can only get served to two people. I'm being facetious. But you see how it goes. Where it started was to show that you better be afraid of us or we'll delete your channel or something like that. What it is now is basically public relations in the way things are served. In episode 204, we talked about the homogenization of the common experience. Now think about the synchronized lockdowns across 186 countries. There were enacted nearly identical restrictions, wait for it, within 10 days. How's that for public relations? The slogans were identical. We had things like Build Back Better. You remember them. There were endless slogans that were meant to get behind this and push. And when you see things like common experience being homogenized so that, say, my experience in a day is not all that different from Jason, even though he lives 1,000 miles away from me, there's kind of a homogenization of thought and experience that's been employed just because of the way we get information these days. But now consider when PR is put behind the whole machine that delivers the information in the first place.
There are people's entire careers that exist only because of the effectiveness of public relations. How many politicians have a completely different public persona than they actually are in reality? People who have absolutely no business being in the positions they're in, but the spin that's put on them in the public's mind is so extreme that they get elected again and again.
How many times have you seen the YouTube clip where someone has taken the time to go around the country in all 50 states, if they can pull it off, and look for the one soundbite that is repeated verbatim? There's your PR. It's more than just PR, but there's your basic PR being rolled out. And what are they doing in that? Well, they're homogenizing all experience across all the states that happened in. There are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people being exposed to the exact verbatim information in the exact same set of words. And to take it a step further, if we think about World War II, think about some of the marketing that went into that. I wonder if Bernays had a hand in Uncle Sam as an example. In episode 666, which is coming up with Wayne McCroy, we're going to talk about the egregore. And when you're doing kind of social engineering at this level, and you're aware that they've been doing it through people like Bernays since the 20s, that's two decades before World War II. And we get things like Uncle Sam, you'll be able to connect the dots and recognize that an egregore has been created with the idea of Columbia or the idea of Uncle Sam. Now jet pack it with propaganda public relations and the whole litany of things we're laying down here. It's quite mind-boggling that we have two brain cells to rub together, quite frankly.
Well, now it's a very well-known fact that mass media gets talking points. As you said, the people put together these clips where it's verbatim the same thing. And it's easy in the digital age. They write up the script and out it goes to all the affiliates. But you also see it from places like political parties where all their little minions that they send out are given the same talking point to repeat over and over again, no matter what program they go on. This is all the same technique. You get the idea, what it is you want to push, you attach the emotion to it, and out it goes.
It could be so extensive that it would literally blow your mind. What if there were activation keywords in those phrases that get said across the entire country? What if there are spells being cast? I could what if all day long, but knowing all that we do and knowing how much occult effort was put into the founding of this country through Freemasonry and other means, skull and bones and other means, you've got to imagine that when something that powerful is being done, where you're homogenizing mass consciousness, that things like that are being implemented. And actually, if you go pay attention, if you go look up two or three of those clips, very carefully listen to the exact words and phrasing, and then look at the words that are accented weird or the words that you wouldn't commonly use every day, and then do an etymology search on them, and you'll start to see what I'm talking about.
Before Bernays, human psychology was primarily studied for medical and philosophical purposes, seeking to understand mental illness, help people overcome trauma, or exploring the depths of the human psyche. Bernays changed all of that by proving that psychological principles could be used to influence society at large. His work demonstrated that people's decisions, opinions, and behaviors could be manipulated through advertising, media, politics, and staged events. By hacking the primal instincts of the masses, Bernays was able to shift entire societal paradigms, such as turning a war into a noble cause, smoking cigarettes in public into a feminist statement, and bacon into a breakfast staple.
When I look at everything that we've covered here and all that I'm aware of that is brought to bear in social engineering in general, I always consider, what about a society like, well, in our country, we don't have a lot to choose from, but someone like the Amish or a group similar to that. I'm not pointing at one. I'm suggesting, are they affected in the same way that the rest of us are, or the majority of us are? And I would suggest they're not. Even if you do some of the fringy groups that don't have the best name, like Scientology, I knew people who were Scientologists. I don't know if it's changed, but they weren't allowed to watch TV at the time. That was one of the things I remembered. And I thought, well, that's actually helpful. But if you go to somewhere like the Amish, where they're really not participating in so much of the information processing and delivery through movies, television, and all the things that we use, how much have they been pulled out of the loop? And I think they've been pulled out quite a bit. My point here is that underscores the value of having a spiritual path and trying to live what you consider to be an upright existence. And it's hard to phrase, but I hope you see what I'm getting at. Did that make any sense, Jason?
Yeah, and the Amish are a great example because while they might live in intentional technological stagnation, it generally seems to be that they are happier and healthier people.
So much of what goes on online, from the memes to even when I'm out in the world and I see people just doing this candy crunching game or that block where the blocks come down. I don't know the names of them. I see it all the time. And what comes to my mind is the social engineering idea that if you've got someone you're trying to control or an adversary, every minute you can occupy them doing something you wanted them to do is a minute they're not using for something important or something to further their own existence. When you blow that out to the number of hours in a day that most people are looking at their phones or online or following someone, it really becomes quite an eye-opening idea, to say the least.
Well, that technique is something that social media employs on a day-to-day basis to everybody, because their whole shtick is to get you to stay on that social media. So they're going to use everything at their disposal to get you to not leave their platform. They want you to be as engaged as possible, because that then turns into advertising dollars for them.
Bingo. I mean, nail, meat, hammer. You just hit it on the head. There are accounts, I want to say it was in one of Estelin's books, but I don't remember, of some of the founders of major social media apps and platforms who were covered in the book. And again, I think it might be Estelin, but I'm not sure. And what they said was, I made this $1 million app, and as I was working on it, I got to the point where I was coming home and I was still working. Then my family started to get angry, then my wife. So I made a rule that I'll only do it at work. Well, when I got the app done, it was so effective that I found the need to ban my family from using this application that I created. And the number one reason given was because of addiction and the amount of hours in a day that are literally wasted on said applications.
One of the most disturbing revelations of Bernays' work is that many people do not necessarily make independent decisions. Instead, their choices are the result of engineered suggestions that have been carefully planted into their subconscious minds. When people see a commercial and suddenly decide that they need a new phone, or when they hear a news report and immediately accept its premise without questioning the narrative, they are experiencing engineered consent. Bernays understood that if you could control the source of information, you could control the way people think. People believe that they have free will, which they do, but too often they are responding to stimuli that has been created and introduced to them by hidden persuaders. Eddie proved that people could be made to want things that they did not need, believe things that were not true, and defend ideas that were never their own in the first place.
And now multiply that by a billion, now that AI has been let loose and sometimes claimed to be 60% of all traffic on certain social media platforms. When you're in a day, how many people do you meet or know that would strike you as a leader, someone who's going to make independent decisions? And how many people do you know that are really just want to fall in line behind someone who will take that place? And if you pay attention to that, you'll find that there are actually very few leaders, and even some that do emerge as someone who wants to be a leader, maybe they shouldn't be. But with AI, when you get that commercial and you think, oh, I do need that jacket, I'm going to go buy it, AI already predicted that you were getting ready to want a jacket a day ago or more. That's why you saw the ad in the first place. And that really does put a secret sauce on the whole process, Jason.
It really does. And what Bernays did to such a degree was trying to sell an emotion that, hey, if you just bought this new car, you would feel like a winner. That's the idea. That has been recycled over and over and over again to the point that we just live in this insane mass consumerism society. And I can give you like the best example of this. Modern day Christmas time.
My God. I mean, let's break that for a minute. When we say Christmas, what are we talking about? What is Christmas for? What's it supposed to be about? Well, we're told it's the birth of Jesus. That was the original idea that we were sold. But it's gotten to the point, and I did this for the last 2 years. Turner Classic Movies is a Hollywood insider. They play all the golden era movies and all the old stuff, occasionally some new stuff. But I find it fascinating to watch the TV listings, particularly TCM. Now, on TCM last year, when Christmas came around, they didn't play Ben-Hur. They didn't play King of Kings. They didn't play any of the typical things that play to the idea that Christmas is the birth of Jesus. They played war movies and other things. This year, they did the same thing. As a matter of fact, I got interested, so I searched 4 or 5 days beyond Christmas, and finally Ben-Hur came up, but it started like at a weird time, not a normal viewing time. I think it might have been like 5 a.m. or something like that. And so what you're seeing there is social engineering. When I was growing up, a week before Christmas, the Ben-Hurs, the Wonderful Life, the Grinch Who Stole Christmas, all the Christmassy things began to play. And that's another thing. The cartoon Grinch Who Stole Christmas, which isn't really speaking to the point of why we're supposed to have Christmas, was always played with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It was darn near absent this year, but had been replaced by the new versions of Grinch. I'm going to make a suggestion here. I don't yet know if it's true, but I suspect, definitely suspect that it will be. I started noticing years and years ago that they would make a movie that has the exact same title of a movie who's already been made. And I think, well, why are they doing that? Just to leverage off the fact that people are familiar with the title. But in many cases, the movie with the same name that was remade might have had a character name, but the plot wasn't even the same. Then I saw the movies remade where the plot was similar but different. And what I think is going on there is, I'll use Back to the Future as a good example. Did you know that Eric Stoltz shot the majority of Back to the Future before we were told they fired him because it wasn't working and they got the Marty McFly, Michael J. Fox that we're used to? But all that footage exists. And we have been allowed to see small snippets. Well, why haven't, you know, people would be interested in that. Why haven't we been allowed to see more? What I'm suggesting is when you see movies made with the same title, I think it's intended there's a point in the future where the old movies showing the good old days will be gone and literally replaced with a movie of the same name. And I think this is going on in music. I think it's going on a few levels. I mean, what do you think about that, Jason? Do you think I'm stretching the bridge too far?
No, I don't think you're stretching the bridge too far, but there's so much put into modern movies of glitz and glamour and flash and pizzazz and all that, that a lot of people who are of a certain age don't even find the thought of watching an older film appealing. And by not wanting to see those older films, you're right, they're not seeing what things used to look like, because obviously those things would be showing a representation of what the world was like at that time, which is very, very, very different than how things are now.
I'll give an example. When I was about to turn 16 in my age group, I think I was just under 15 and a half when I got my learner's permit. And there were rules. You had to have an adult with you for a period of time. But then you could actually, I think if I remember correctly, I could drive to work and things like that without a licensed adult in the car. In other words, we were driving when we were 15 and a half or something like that. You could be. Everyone in my age group was counting the days till they could get a car. As soon as you got that license, there was a freedom that I don't think most kids experience now that I can't even explain. Now think of a movie that portrays that. Now think of a time 30 years in the future where driving a car without automation is not only unusual, almost unheard of, but just driving a car is no longer something you can just do at will. If that came to pass, would they want those old movies showing a 15-year-old kid grabbing the keys and having the time of his life? Would they want those examples out there? And I would suggest that no, they wouldn't.
Edward Bernays was not working in isolation. His techniques aligned perfectly with the larger social engineering efforts that were coming from organizations like the Tavistock Institute and the Frankfurt School. These institutes studied and developed psychological warfare, mass media influence, and cultural destabilization tactics to reshape society. Bernays' work was the foundation for mass consumerism, identity politics, and social movements that were not organic, but manufactured and directed. If you have ever wondered why culture changes so quickly, why old traditions are erased, and why people are so easily divided, the answer lies in the deliberate shaping of public perception. The elite planners know that if you can control the way people think, you can control the world.
All right, let's give a big example of that. How many times recently have you gone to look at a clip from somewhere like TikTok where someone's talking and then they say, and he grabbed a pew pew and unalived somebody? I have one question first. Is there some miracle in the world that prevents algorithm, AI, and sensors from not understanding that pew pew is a word meant to mean gun and that unalive actually means dead? Is there some mind block in the world so they can't know that you're still talking about the same thing? My point is, people are self-censoring basically on the back of exactly what Jason laid down. In episode 78, we mentioned that algorithms were going to be rewritten to catch anyone using the V word, or any word for that matter. YouTube removed more than 1 million videos labeled COVID misinformation between February 2020 and August 21. You can find it in the YouTube transparency report. Twitter revealed government portals inside Twitter for real-time takedown requests. The biggest side effect that I've noticed about the censorship was that they successfully got people to censor themselves. There will never be a time on any platform that I'm speaking on or my own where I replace a word because of censorship. And in doing that, you have not only submitted to the social engineering that got you to do it in the first place, you're doing it to yourself. No authority required. But that does bring us to the top of the hour. Anything else you want to get in before we take a short break, Jason?
Think about all the things that you do on a daily basis and what you're bombarded with from the culture around you. And then as you're listening to this episode, think about how much of that came from the techniques of Edward Bernays. And think about the fact that he came up with this over 100 years ago.
It's incredible. If you took that information alone and thought about 100 years of development, that doesn't even address AI. If you start to look into AI, the social engineering portion of AI, and you can look up papers on this, the influence is meant to be imperceptible, and it is, but it's much worse than that, because if you've been using AI, it is creating a dossier on you. So thorough a dossier that the likes of it have never been seen in any time we're aware of. It knows everything about you, who you talk to, what you say, what you like, what you don't like, what you buy, where you go. It knows everything about you, and then employs the mission that is social engineering in many cases, with the idea that it be implemented imperceptibly. Lastly, I don't think I can say the AI is smarter than you, but it sure as hell has endless resources compared to what you can bring to bear just thinking. But that's it. Anything else, Jason?
Nope. We're going to continue on in hour two, breaking down all of the things that Edward Bernays pulled off. And he laughed his way all the way to the bank because he died a very wealthy man for his work.
I wonder if he ever lost sleep. Probably not. Anyhow, hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode, and members get access to all the forums and comments sections. They get access to all my solar work. New members that are signing up get to choose a free solar image that they can print. Some of them print up to about 50 inches or any size below that. You also get access to Shoot the Moon, covering my past telescope work on the moon, so-called UFOs and chemtrails, before anyone would believe that was a thing. Lastly, you get exclusive access to my current solar work, and there's going to shortly be 20 member-only solar videos that keep you up to date with what I've been looking at and what I've been trying to learn. With that, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes for hour two. Hope to see you logged in as a member, and I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
the enemy of knowing.
Come